And so it's my pleasure to moderate this, although it seems to be the moderator just passes around the microphone, which is a nice role for the moderator. So as you know, in this partnership, we have partners from government, industry, other groups, non-governmental groups, and academics. And this is the opportunity for the academics to hear what type of research, what their research can do to assist in the development of public policy. And to that end, we asked in advance and we circulated the response. Some of you might have seen those responses that were posted on the conference website from four of our partners. So Ken Whitehurst from Consumer Council, Michael Jenkin, the former bureaucrat, now retired, but still active, André Allard from the Office de la Protection du Consommateur du Québec, current bureaucrat, not yet retired, and Nikki Islick from the CSA group. And were very generous in providing us with quite detailed responses as to, you know, what exactly are best practices in terms of research. How do they use research? And what would be helpful to them in the future. And as you know, after the break, we will have another panel where we'll look more at the priorities. So these two panels are really about, you know, what can this partnership do in terms of advancing its goal of creating more public policy-oriented consumer interest research.
Take over the microphone for a second.
Oh, we need to give the microphone to Sue.
You have to go and talk to some people at the door.
Now,
I'm not sure what the next thought in her head was, but which person was going to come up? Was that you, Michael? Or you? Oh, yeah, go ahead. Then that will help us identify the rascals. I did read this material that was prepared twice, and I found it really very useful. I think that, in a way, when we promised at the beginning that we would try to get some interaction going between academics and people who actually see real problems and have to address them, that I've never seen any more forthright sort of response to that than asking them and having them write down all those, to identify all those issues that really do matter to them. And so if you're an academic, you can probably find more problems to research there than you can use. All right. Let's start at the left end then, okay? Andre. Oh, okay. All right. Now, we're going to... I'm not sure what... My lead just left me.
So I'm starting off?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to overview.
I have to hold this, eh? Yeah. All right, so... it's all right. So I'm from the Office of Consumer Office, and the translation, we were called a board, which is fine with me, but there's no English translation for our organization as such. So let's call it OPC. I mean, the best way I find out to cooperate with researchers is still to them to know exactly what we do on a daily basis. I mean, obviously, policy making is a very long journey from the identification of a particular issue to whatever solution we want to propose to the government. So, first of all, what we're doing at the OPC, we're a law enforcement agency, so we do enforce a number of pieces of legislation, but we also are policy makers. So to make policies or to propose policies, we have, first of all, to identify problems in the marketplace. We do receive 130,000 phone calls per year from consumers, so it's a tremendous source of information to determine where are the problems. We do have also a number of permanent consultation committees where sit consumer representatives, business group representative, academics as well, so it's also a place where we are informed on what's going on in the marketplace. So in terms of, and we also enforce our legislation, meaning inspection, meeting with merchants, you know, they gave us a lot of information, they are challenging our interpretation of the legislation. They are providing us with a lot of information on their business model, and so we have to, cope with the marketplace reality. So this is very important to know. We were discussing a moment ago about sharing economy. We don't receive any complaints about users of whatever tools exist in the sharing community until, and I'm not sure what's going to be the future, but until something happens, and then they'll all come to us for us to regulate this portion of the economy or not. But we are not addressing those potential problems. What we're addressing is problems that are experienced by both businesses and consumers. Now, just to conclude on this very brief, very, very brief.
You only have another 20 minutes.
Well, I calculated that we were four, and I was allowed to 6 minutes at the most, 2 minutes. So I lost my ID here.
That was my point.
So, yeah.
We know each other.
Yeah, right. Maybe, yes. I was looking at my notes here. So searchers has to be aware of what we're doing in order to provide us with those tools we need in order to address those problems. So obviously it has to be done upriver, because when we are addressing those problems, we have to consult those studies that have been made over time by searchers. But at the same time, most of them may not be used by our organization, because we won't ever address this problem, because we don't receive any complaints. On the other hand, though, when we need them, we have to use them. So, because we do have some academics sitting on our committees, I think it's a good thing for academics to be in touch with those representatives. So I invite you to identify them on our committees and be in touch with them and provide and look what we're addressing in those committees and what's going on our radar screen. Question, comments?
I've often thought that anybody that has a regulatory responsibility that's impacting a particular set of actors in the marketplace, they should have a committee that they regularly have to hear from. For example, with respect to the enforcement, why are you spending all your time enforcing on this sort of stuff when we think the real problem is over here, or whatever? Just that sort of challenge function. So if you could just give any insight concerning, like, what it is, how you actually use this formal committee or committees, because it sounds like you have more than one, that would be very helpful. Because I think it is something that potentially could be more widely used by any number of different consumer agencies.
Can you pass him the little one? You just need to speak in the... Wait.
Well, I don't know if I got you right, but all those information is accessible through those mechanisms that we put in place as permanent consultation committees. It's an overtime process, because those concerns that are expressed or raised within those committees have to match other concerns that are raised by consumers through our other ongoing process to identify issues. As soon as something happens in the marketplace, we certainly be the first one to be to be conscient, to be aware. So through, you know, the thing is you have to open all the input mechanisms so you can be in touch with the real marketplace. And so things that you're addressing in the long-term researches may not be a reality at the time we speak. Maybe it will become sooner or later. So you know, the timing is not always, we're not always on the same pace.
I would just say I sit on the board of the Office de Protection du Consommateur, and from an academic perspective, that's extremely useful because it allows me to know what are the issues and so informs my research. And I don't know to what extent in other provinces or even federally to what extent academics sit on boards. And I think that's a useful way for, you know, this exchange and for the policy issues to orient research and vice versa. So I wonder whether the... I don't think I can give you all a chance to speak. I wasn't here when Bob gave André the floor. So I wonder for the other panelists, your experience of using, what's the biggest challenge? I was sitting beside Mary and she said, you know, access to, both for academics, access to research, other researchers, but as well access to the work that you're doing. So what do you think the biggest challenge is from your perspective? Can you speak in
I mean, from our standpoint, it's capacity and getting efficiency. Our sense is that there is phenomenal public access to public processes. You can go online and look at our annual report of activities and see how many places we have consumer representatives. Our problem is mobilizing information that makes our expressions of consumer problems actually credible and actionable. And I did a standard academic cheat. I gave in the comments, I gave all the nuts and bolts that are your reading, so you can go read that. And I came to actually make a simpler point, and I actually came with AIDS. So, we're very concerned to be able to mobilize knowledge. We research, we listen, and we represent. That's what we do. And I think there's a huge discontinuity that is killing the discipline of consumer interest research. And it really is that there is that lack of connectivity with knowledge mobilization. And one of the reasons for that is consumer organizations are starved of resources to do that. But that doesn't mean action can't be taken. So I've come with an action-oriented agenda. In fact, I have an 8-point action list you can go look at. And they're all actually really simple, tangible things that people in the academic community can do to change it. And I don't think it would take you long, and it wouldn't be hard. And we're prepared to work on our side of it. Our board has been talking quite strategically about what we need to do to become better listeners and better mobilizers of information. And so this action list steps to that. So I'd be happy to give it to everybody. It has one single simple thing on it, which is a URL, which you can access later. And that way I don't have to use a lot of time here. And I've already given you a long list of reading because as someone who also does research, often secondary research, trying to find your research and trying to work with government websites and all the different sources, you're terribly disorganized. And there's a lot you could do to make it a lot easier for us because I know academics like to think they're tight for resources, but you are wealthy. You're wealthy. You do not know parsimony. So you've got to begin to think about how we do organize information so that other people can mobilize it and use it. And there are other organizations that need to be part of that too. Governments need to be. Journalism needs to be. It's really notable to me, if you've ever used automated reference collection, any of the systems that are coming out. There are tons of retail systems, right, for quick access of references. You can automate the input of a meta-described content into your workflow, right? I don't know, some of you may have worked with it. I do, because I'm desperate to be able to parse all the information. You know, no government site in Canada supports instant reference acquisition. None. The only major newspaper I can think of that does it is the New York Times. These are all things that the academic community, whether in this discipline or, frankly, many disciplines, because, I mean, you're an interesting, the academics that are here are an interesting group. You're a nexus group, you know, because there are many crossover points. I know that, you know, like in the room here, I have the representatives of two or three of the ministries that we relate to over consumer issues. They're by no means representative of the full pantheon, and you know, we heard about some of that this morning with waste diversion, right? Like, we actually have a member of the Consumers Council. It's on the board of directors of Waste Diversion Ontario. We worked very hard to get them there, and there are now major reforms happening in waste diversion in Ontario, partly through our efforts. So we do that kind of mobilization. So that's what I would say, and I just would like everybody to get a card, and I could say a lot more.
Well, okay, I'll just say two things. I had a little two-pager. Please read it, because it's a bit of a statement of the problematique and also where I think some of the problems lie. I think there are, you know, it's a, both a very special problem because of the inherent interdisciplinary character of consumer research to try and aggregate information effectively, whereas, you know, there are well-defined disciplinary channels. You're an economic policymaker to access the economics discipline, literature, or whatever. And I think, though, ironically, that's one of the big strengths, because often interdisciplinary research is very powerful because it is, by bringing together various bits of understanding, tends to be very effective and relevant for policymakers. It brings in the social, economic, and whatever dimensions. I think there's two issues that I would address, you know, if we want to get down to action on this, that I think are really important. One of them is, I think, governments themselves, and particularly some of the actors that were my colleagues around the table, need to, I think, jointly and individually get the message out more to you guys about the importance of the work you do as academics for this work. And to create, literally, to take the time to create some trenchant examples for you about how your work actually does make a very significant contribution to our ability to both frame policy problems and the analytics behind it, and also then to look at solutions. The other, though, I think, which is equally important, is on your side of the equation, which is, I think, to a degree, the importance of communicating more visibly your own research with the moniker on it that attaches to the public interest dimension of consumers and their needs and problems in society. And I because other academic areas are doing this. I mean, the people in economics and public administration and political science are engaged quite actively in marketing their research to government through institutes and journal publications and so forth. There are many examples of it. So I think there is an incumbent part on here, and one of the best ways of doing it, I think, are both these kinds of initiatives, which the SSRC grant is supporting, but also, to consciously focus on more publication and presentation of your work in fora that's accessible to both decision makers and, God forbid, the public in general. Right. Because I think there's also a great deal of interest and hunger out there in your research, in the public domain, as well as simply the government domain, because people resonate to it. And I found this for the years I've worked in this area. People resonate, even in the political area. When you talk to politicians, they get it like that.
you know, because it's part of their own daily experience. So, end of speech and sermon.
I'll just be quick, yeah. So I don't know if there's people in the room that don't know who CSA is, but we're the Canadian Standards Association. So we work with consumers and academics on our technical committee. So we develop thousands of standards national and are involved in international standards development. Some of the people in the room are very active. And on our Canadian committees, we include, we call it a balanced matrix. So we have academics represented, we have consumers represented, industry, government, and all of these experts sit around a table and develop a standard of what we consider to be best practice. Now, all standards are voluntary unless referenced in legislation, but I think it's a very powerful tool for sharing this information and maybe sharing your research. One example I can give is recently we submitted a grant application with McMaster University. And basically, they're considering a CSA standard, the knowledge mobilization piece of their research. So they've conducted some research. They're going to help us develop the seed document. And that seed document will come into our standards development process, which includes the balance of opinions, and then hopefully be published as a standard. And they're going to, so their research informed our standard, and then they want to conduct research on the implementation of the standard afterwards and the impact it'll have across Canada, maybe globally. So that's just an example of how we would use your research. You've heard about the privacy standard a number of times today, and that was an example of a standard, based on consumer interest research. And another one that's going to be published soon is the home inspection standard, again, largely based on consumer interest research. And I think there's five consumer representatives sitting on that committee representing, and they're intended to be informed consumers. So hopefully they have the most up-to-date research, and hopefully they're reaching out to the academic community to get that information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a few minutes. Is there any questions or comments from either side of the academic versus the rest divide? It's a crossable divide. I'm pushing it right now.
No, thank you. I'm Derek Ireland, previously involved with Office of Consumer Affairs as well. I was going to follow up on a point that Michael made that resonated with me. I think one of the things academic and other policy research need to be is patient. You'd be amazed at the number of stupid ideas I came up with way in the past and ended up going into legislation later. But I will give you a more concrete example. A group of people were academics and policy people were complaining about the Canadian conspiracy law in the Canadian Competition Act in the early 90s. And I was advocating that work when I was the senior economist in the Competition Bureau to blank stares from lawyers. Lo and behold, I opened the newspaper and find more or less what we were all advocating was in the amendments to the Canadian Competition Act in 2010. I actually have experience of that in China as well, but I'm not going to go into that. But you'd have to be patient. You might be surprised what might happen 2 decades after you wrote that great paper to find that, in fact, it resonated. And as Michael said, it helped to frame the debate and may have actually helped to move something along. Thank you.
Of the information technology we've been talking about, the problem is everything is accelerated. So that's one of the concerns, right? I might have a great idea today, but by the time people know about it, it's like, wow, that was so passé. You know, you need to do this over again. That, to me, is a huge challenge. Yeah, I'll ask Sue first.
Hi, Sue McGregor. I'm just going to offer my services. I'm reading these reports saying we can't get at documents because we have to pay for them. We can't get at documents because they're in journals. We don't have subscriptions, etc. Liaison with an academic because we can get them for free. Okay? I mean, I just wrote a paper where most of the stuff that I was looking for wasn't in our library. And so I simply sent a document delivery request, and 2 days later, some elf would go running around wherever the elves run around. And I have like probably 15 documents from journals that our library doesn't hold, and it didn't cost me a cent. So if you have books, they'll photocopy chapters and books for you according to the laws. And journal, if you can't find a journal article, then contact an academic person you know, because we can get it in the library for you. That shouldn't stop you. That's one thing this network can do. That shouldn't stop you. Ever.
Yeah, two things. I think one of the things that's happening in government is the whole policy cycle has sped up so much that, you know, something's on the front page of the Star or the Globe, and people in policy get a call, and by the end of the week, they're supposed to have worked up a solution to it. And there's really not enough time to contact folks in the academic world to sit down and discuss what the solution might be. Sometimes we might hire a consultant for 2 or 3 months and spend a couple $100,000 to have them work out a problem for us, which if they're a good consultant, they won't do exactly. They'll do it in such a way that we'll have to ask them back a year later. So the cycle is such that it's incredibly quick. You know, it's policy by the front page of what's on the newspaper. So that's a frustration from someone who's worked in policy for a very long time. I think the second thing that's happening is there's a kind of hollowing out in government that because of changes that have occurred over the past 15, 20 years, there's a lessening of experience in the civil service, at least provincially, where you have some young people who are hired on contract, but there's a real thinning of the ranks that's occurring, and I think there's perhaps more of a role for academics, both tenured and tenureless, people who can't find permanent jobs to work more closely with government.
I want to do a connection between the comment of Sue and I want to Boone's too, and the comment of Ken. I may give you a services too. I'm a law teacher, but I'm developed to some website for academic project, and I think we need to have a more powerful tool than the one we have at this moment. We need to have a website where it would be easy to aggregate all the productions, academic production we do and production that the association do too. I think it's time, and I don't want to anticipate on the next panel, which is what do you do next, but I think it could be a very good idea to have a project like this, and I may give it for free. And I just want to mention 3 weeks ago, I see André, because André Engineer was here, we launched a new website dedicated to the law of Quebec, lpc.quebec. And we put online more as thousands jurisprudence dedicated to this law. So I think it could be possible to have a more coast-to-coast website where we may have a bilingual and with the 10 provinces legal systems.
I think I have time for one more. I know you're all waiting for the coffee break.
Maybe I can be really quick, and then you'll have time for two. Quick comment. I think with a lot of us in academia, an issue is when we go to publish papers, you publish them in refereed journals, and then refereed journals are going to turn around and charge for the for people to get access to the papers. And I think we need some way of maybe, I don't know, posting our abstracts or something. We need some sort of way of breaking that charge for publications down so that it is more accessible. And I don't know what that is. We can. We need that cooperation to be able to do something.
And there's a really, really simple thing to do right now. I'm happy to help with some of the other consumer groups. There are really, four or five of us that are the major ones in the country. We're not to begin communicating with consumer groups is pretty small. And I have a simple, easy-to-complete form that's one of my 8 ideas to simply tell us what your latest research endeavors are. And the other thing that we're very actively engaged with right now, because we're talking to some other key sectors in consumer protection about this, is we are looking at becoming an aggregator of events and milestones information. And we're going to put in place a platform that will easily allow people, trusted partners to connect to that, because we think that it's time that the country just simply knows what's going on, simply knows a report's being released on this date, a piece of research, or that there's a presentation on this, or that there's a consultation there, And we think this isn't something that governments can do, nor that academic institutions can do. For one thing, academic institutions are all competing with each other these days, even if they collaborate. Yes, they are. For funding, I watch it all the time. And I also feel that based on some research that we did, you know, government and business are not always the most trusted partners of consumers. So they're not the natural place that people go to get information other than information from the business or from the government. So we did a research report. It's part of the reading of another one of our eight steps, where we looked at we were looking at consumer representation and the institutionalization of it in the processes around the agreement on internal trade, which, by the way, most educated people in Canada don't even know what it is. But it's important. But one of the things that we did that you may all find interesting was a 2,500-person survey on what people think about consumer representation. What do they think about consumer groups? What are they, do they expect from consumer groups? And what, and do they, how do they feel about trust factors to do with business and government in both the funding of consumer groups as sources of information and what have you? So there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. I don't think anybody has done anything like that that we could find ever. And one thing that we definitely see is that there's got to be a platform where the public can get information on consumer interest matters and consumer interest developments and consumer interest consultation, and that is not coming from business, and that is not coming from government, and it is not coming from academic institutions. It's coming in one easy-to-find place. So we're thinking very seriously about doing that, and I would invite anyone from any academic institution in Canada to talk to us. It should be dead easy to mobilize this information and put it in a place where consumers can find it.
Well, I think that's a good way to wrap up this panel. And we have a 15-minute break, and then we come back to talk about priorities. So now that we know we need to do stuff, we're going to know what is it that we need.